Hey everybody, Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols. We are back with a Tactical Fitness Report, and we are going to talk about the PST, the physical screening test, and we're specifically talking about the BUDS level PST. And what a perfect world should look like if you are going to take the PST 10 days from now, right? So you could say a week to 10 days from now, this is what you should be doing. So we're going to create that 10-day window for you of how you're training for that. Now, obviously, you have been training before. You're not a beginner starting at day one. That's not what we're talking about. This is you've been training. You've been working hard. You've already taken a couple of practice tests. You've created a system that works for you. And 10 days from now, you are going to take that test for the first time, where it matters, in front of a mentor, probably in front of the first Navy SEAL you've ever met, and this is your ticket to get into the training, right? Okay. So let's start it from day one, 10 days out. Jeff, it's up to you.
Yeah, so that, again, just to reiterate just very briefly, this person that we're talking about in this perfect world, this male, female, whatever, this person's been training. Let's just say, for example, for the most part, they've been heeding the advice of Stu and I, hey, do well in your PST, prepare for BUDS before you go see that mentor. So that process has been done. Like, we're not talking about how this person spent the last year specifically. We're just saying this person's been following a pretty good program. He's been showing consistent benefit and improvement over that program. He's been able to take his weaknesses and turn them into not weaknesses, right? And he's conversed with either Stu or I or his mentor, and is like, yeah, you're doing pretty good. There's a good shot that you're going to probably, hopefully, auto-qual. We'll say that. That's the guy, right?
Right.
So 10 days out, if he's practicing well, you know, if he's moving well and his training is good, 10 days out is still a fair amount of work volume. You can still go in 10 days out.
Absolutely.
Intensity is down, right? When I say intensity is defined by the weight of that mass, whatever you're moving, right? We're not lifting heavy at all.
Right, right.
We're not doing weighted pull-ups at this point. We're not doing a whole lot of resistance work. We're really concentrating probably on a decent amount of calisthenics, maybe some suspension work, some band work, and or you're in the weight room probably doing some total body work that's really meant to stimulate, right, and not break tissue down.
Right.
So that's kind of like where my 10 days, again, it's like what we're trying to do is go into, you know, that 7 to 10 day window. We're trying to go in as healthy as possible.
Yes.
Not as, okay, I got to keep training. Because here's the reality. At that point, 7 to 10 days out, you've got what you've got, right? You have improved as much as you can over that last 6 months, 8 months. So that's a really screwed up thing, is you can be training perfect. Like they were saying, this kid, this young adult's training great. Well, he could get a hair in his ass, like a lot of people do, and start training harder leading up to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do that. That's the big one. That's not an opportunity to cram for your last bit of test.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
We're like, hey, I'm pretty confident my training's been good. Now I'm going to make sure I'm going in healthy. So basically I tell people that 7 to 10 days out, act like you're sick. Feed yourself the appropriate food. Yeah. Get to sleep. Don't overtrain. Like, I'm going to go for walks. I'm going to do some band work and suspension work, work on some body weight stuff. I'm going to work on my tempo and cadence, but I'm not going to work into fatigue.
Yeah. You know what I like working on 10 days out? I like starting to really focus on goal pace, right? So when we focus on, like, and here's how I define goal pace. So let's say your last mile and a half run was a 10-minute mile and a half, right? Well, I try to say, all right, let's do this. Let's try to make your new goal pace somewhere between 9 and 9:30, right? So that means you're going to drop all your running intervals so it would match that zone between 9 and 9:30. So now your quarter miles are going to be between 90 and 95 seconds, right? And so you're just trying to muscle memory. I hate that term, but you're just trying to get in the groove. So you know when you start running that mile and a half, you know that your arm swing, your stride, your breathing rhythm, all of that is in sync with a 9:15, 9:30 run, right? And you've worked hard enough to where you can maintain that for five more laps.
Right.
Same way for the swim. You know, I like, you know, instead of doing hardcore sprints and just burning yourself out, you know, let's pull back a notch and let's try to get that. My favorite is that yard per second pace.
Right.
So you're going to go yard per second, whatever distance you're running or swimming, you should be a yard per second, 50 yards, 50 seconds, 100 yards, 100 seconds, 500 yards, 500 seconds is an 8:20. That's a solid, good swim. Yeah. Can you do better than that? Sure. If you want to break eight, you know, hit sub 48 every 50 and you're going to be able to do that. But, you know, you got to also know what's good enough.
Yep.
Right. What is good enough? Do you want to try to waste all your energy and try to hit a 7:30 on a swim, right, for your next thing when you already know your weakness is pull-ups and running, right?
Right.
Let's pick our poison here and figure out, all right, so if I do an 8:20, that'll still put me in the top 10% of the swim. Now I hit my push and I hit my pull and my sit-ups and, you know, I'm able to have a little bit more juice instead of burning it all out in the swim. So you got to think strategically, you know, when you're thinking about the PST. It is not,
right,
when people say it's not, you know, 110% effort the whole time. I mean, it is.
Relative.
But it is a maintenance effort the whole time. So how long can you maintain a pace for, you know, 500 yards? How long can you maintain your pace for, you know, sit-ups at 1 per second or, you know, 25 every 30 seconds, right? Yep. So you're going to get 100 to 120 somewhere in there. I mean, that's a solid pace, right? You got to practice that pace, right? So that is where I would say you're 10 days out. You should start really kind of pulling back on, like Jeff said, any heavy weights, high level, you know, high intensity sprinting, and pull back on, try to just keep your lungs open with some goal pace activity.
Yeah.
So I'm not a fan, you know, personally, coming from my background as the powerlifting football player, I knew my weakness was endurance.
Yeah.
So I didn't like to take too many days off from doing something that got my heart and lungs going.
For sure.
So I always would do something, you know, non-impact, you know, I'd go swimming, do biking, just to keep my lungs open on those days where it would be less intense.
Yep. So. Yeah, and just to be super clear, when I'm talking intensity or weight room, right, I could say a percentage, but even the lowest percentage in my hypertrophy program is too heavy 10 days out. So be super clear. Like, you shouldn't be moving mass at a high velocity too much, really, unless the sport is – like, if I'm an Olympic sprinter, 100, 200, I might be working some neurological – explosive stuff.
Sure.
Very low reps, very, very low reps, and very like just come out of the blocks, slow down, come out of the block, something, right? Very, very specific. And that's more just like keep the competitive edge.
Yeah.
Like, because we're also saying is like it's also probably not a great idea, especially from the standpoint of the mind, to just shut everything down 10 days out or even seven.
Yeah.
Like for most people, it's like it's going to be very hard for you guys to shut things down 36 hours out.
Yeah.
Let alone 7 to 10.
Yeah, or the day before. I mean, it's hard to take a day off the
day
before.
It totally is.
You know, it is.
So it's really just feathering how much intensity. But again, really what we're looking at is, you know, the question is like, hey, of 10 days out, we can put some work in. But if you're even risking fatigue, real fatigue, like, oh, I got out of breath and started swimming with it. No. We know the difference between tired and fatigue, right? So that is what you're trying to eliminate. You're eliminating additional stress that your body has to heal from.
Yeah.
Like you can put stimulus, right? Go for a nice little jog, go for some lift. You're not going to break the muscle down. You're just going to continue to reinforce the idea of, hey, I still need to feed myself in this state of lower demand. So that's kind of what my transition next is like physical activity gets drawn way back.
Yeah. So volume and intensity drops, but goal pace is the focus.
It's skill acquisition and goal pacing. It's like, hey, if I'm going to get in the pool, I'm just going to really work on getting into the wall, push off the wall, glide, stand up. turn around, try that again or something. I'm gonna start really, really dissecting the skills that I need to do on the PST.
It's a good point, because you're going to do that 20 times in a 25-yard pool. So,
so you can, if you start working on cadence, work on some of those turns, you know, a little bit, just again, then it becomes stretching a little bit, get in the water, offload some of that gravity. Like that's
mobility days.
Absolutely. So that's what we're looking at 7 to 10 days out, right? You know, really that takes us, so covered the back end, you know, I'm really not doing much of anything. This really for me is remaining till about day five days out.
Sure.
Give or take the person, right?
And maybe even a day off in there too.
Totally. Like
complete day off where all you do is walk and work, maybe some yard work.
Yep.
You know, you're not like laying on your ass all day doing nothing. No. You know, you're still moving around, doing stuff, stretching, mobility, foam rolling, you know, working out anything that aches. Usually what I like to do on those days is I get my foam roller and I just go from like feet, you know, I start off with a lacrosse ball, go with the foam roller on my very bottom of my Achilles, and then work myself all the way up my backside. Then I roll over, work it all the way down my front side. And whatever aches, I just spend a little more time on. Like if I hit that IT band, I'm like, woo, let me stay over here a little longer. Or, you know, my thighs are a little tight, you know, stay on there. Maybe turn on that hyper ice and vibrate it, or use the, you know, car buffer. You know, just whatever's tight, loosen it up. You know, take a day to do that in that first 5 day window.
Yeah. I think from like, from an emotional standpoint, throttling back some of that work can be a little bit hard for people. But the fact is that you'll get more benefit doing that, right? Taking time off or intensity, dropping that intensity off. Cause what I think what people have a hard time is this is like, you know, leading up, you know, the 6 months prior to this, they have allocated this time each day or multiple times each day. This is when I always train. So now you've throttled back your work, but you still have those time blocks going. Usually I'm in this working. So a lot of people just kind of fall back into that work and volume goes up and
they
don't really heal.
Yeah.
So just be very aware of like, you're going to be in a routine. Routine says work hard these once or twice, 2 days, but now you're 7 to 10 days out. Your body's saying train hard. And your mind is going, no, I got to throttle back.
Yeah.
Right. And so now we're looking at the two things that I think part of people, they feel like I need to do less of because since my work activity is low, right? Well, now I don't need to sleep as much and I probably don't
eat
as many calories.
Yeah.
And that's completely the wrong way to go about it. It's like when you're in this state of healing, maintain that caloric demand that you've had. Right. We're talking quality foods. We're not going to get deep into this, but we're saying that this person over the last year has maintained a good caloric balance, right? They've been able to heal. They haven't been getting sick. Their weight hasn't been going up and down. It's just been steadily going up or it's been maintained. And at times it goes down a little bit because work capacity changes, but body composition of the last year has just been very obviously shifting. So what we don't want to do is like, I'm 10 days out. Well, I'm not working out. I'm going to cut away food. No. Continue to eat as if you're training that 7 to 10 day window. And then on the next piece is sleep.
Mm.
You are not going to be like, well, I'm not working as hard. I'm going to stay up. No. That's when you continue to sleep more. Eat, maintain your dietetic balance over that 7 to 10 days, whatever, when you restart your taper, and try to sleep more, you know, 10, 20, 30 minutes more a night. Maybe get an extra nap. Don't do less sleep or less food because you have less training leading into the taper, right? Yep. Normally, you know, in a non-competitive state, you might taper your food and sleep. Maybe not sleep. Maybe some food, right? Depending on, especially if you're like you're a boxer, you're trying to make weight. You go into your taper, your workload goes down trying to heal them. They may not bring their dietetics up, especially if they only have 3 pounds or something.
Right. Right.
That's the exception where sport doesn't apply to the BUD student.
Absolutely. There are no weight classes at BUDs.
So just throw that out about, oh my God, I'm going to get, if it's 7 to 10 days out, you're worried about the way you look, you're in the wrong fucking program.
Yeah.
How about that? We'll just say that. If you're worried about your six pack and your aesthetics 7 to 10 days before your PST, you're in the wrong world.
Yeah. Don't be scared of carbs.
100%. That's why it's like, well, Jeff, you said that, like, whatever they put on your plate, buds, it's a competition. See who can eat the most. How about that? Like, that's when you're at Buds and you can just like cram food in and go, let's go run. You're a good place. Because that's what's going to happen to everyone that graduates Buds. At some point, they're going to be like, shove a food in. You got 7 minutes. I just consumed 1,300 calories in 7 minutes. 15 minutes later, I'm on the beach at the O course climbing. Literally. That's going to happen, folks. You will literally run. Your warm-up will be from the cafeteria to the O course.
Yep.
That'll be your warm-up. It just hopefully you're standing there in tension by the time the ambulance and the cadre get out of the O course.
Right.
That's it, man. You have 15 minutes to eat and get to the O course, and it'll happen. Lost comms.
I can hear you still.
So that's the thing is, these things we're trying to get you all to do isn't just like, hey, this is opinion. People ask me all the time, what do I wish I would have done better? I wish I would have had this going into first phase. I finally got it, you know, after Hell Week. I finally was like, oh,
yes.
The bike instructors are following a script.
Yeah.
I'm just one of the cast members, but they haven't given me the script.
Yeah. I tell you what, I wish foam rollers had been invented when I had gone through.
For sure.
Yeah, I didn't, freaking lifesavers.
It's crazy because, like, as a college athlete, I never was exposed to foam rolling.
Yeah.
Until, because honestly, it was the athletic training world was kind of new to them, and they hadn't bridged that sport thing yet, and how athletic trainers are equally beneficial, and, like, you know, there's that trade-off. But now you can't go to any department store without finding foam rollers in their fitness section. So yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Right. I think some of the guys that I know that have trained with you primarily have always messaged you back, and it's like, literally every single room in Buds has either or and a foam roller, a ReRB car buffer, and a Normatec. Like, at least one of those, if not all three, in every single room.
Yeah, it's funny. I see all these Ryobi car buffers sitting on bunk beds at Buds pictures. I'm like, yeah, look, awesome. Word's getting out.
So that's kind of my rant, guys. It's like the 7 to 10 days prior is the opportunity to let your body heal, so all the work you just put in, it can express itself in its test.
Yes.
Not just express itself in its test when you're too tired.
I'm going to take it to a next level here real quick, because that is a perfect world, right? And if we could do that, and then, you know, I would say the day of or the day before, you know, let's take a real easy day, maybe a little mobility day, you know. I don't like taking full days off. You know, I just feel like, you know, for me personally, I would rather just get my heart rate up just a little bit, but not necessarily work my muscles to a point where I'm exhausted and I don't recover for the next day's test. But, you know, just, I like getting my lungs open, you know, whether it's some hypoxic swimming or, you know, some biking with maybe Tabata intervals, you know, nothing too crazy, but just, you know, opening my heart and lungs a little bit to get them moving. So, easy day though. Easy day prior. How about food the day prior?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my personally, I'm not going to change anything.
Yes.
Honestly, like a day before. So, but I know your point. So,
number one answer.
I'm going to say, so Stu's question was like, what are you looking at the day before? My answer is going to be, well, what I ate the day before in terms of its routine has been going on for the last 4 months.
Absolutely. Don't try something new just because you heard like this goo powder or whatever is going to make you faster. Don't do that, because you know you could be throwing up in the middle of your PST because your stomach doesn't agree with you. So never try anything new the day of the test. No.
And that's why Stu and I have said over and over and over and over again, and for those of you who haven't heard this, all of these pieces of dietetic advice and these little like, oh, car buffer, oh, foam roller, oh, honey, oh, like whatever, pro gut health. This is stuff to try early on in your training.
Yep.
See how receptive you are to these new implements, these new foods, these new supplements. Because you don't want to get like the person that is projected to win the New York Marathon or the Highland Games World Championship or the 4x100 or what Major League Baseball that just started, they're not starting day one with brand new unbroken in equipment and shoes. nor are they going in with an untested meal plan, or they're not also not going into these events with a kind of like, meh, I'll just sleep when I'm tired mentality.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we're trying to get you guys to go, is like formulating a plan before you, like anything big or small, like when you go to the gym, you warm up. Why? Cause it's the right thing to do. Right. That's what this 7 to 10 day is. This 7 day out is a big warm up for day one.
Yep. And you know what you do? You take notes. Right?
Yes.
You take notes on your workouts. Like, you know, when you took whatever you, let's do this. You know, think about the last month prior to this test. You had a couple of really good days. You just went in and just crushed anything. You had a PR on your run. You had a PR on your swim. Did the most pull-ups you ever did or whatever. You know, those things are written down in a notebook. And then what you do, flashback 24 hours prior, what did you do? What did you eat? You know, how did you sleep? You know, 24 hours prior to your best performance, you should consider repeating that more often.
100%. This is exactly why Naval Special Warfare says when you're in diving, whatever water conditions you're in, you write what equipment you wore, how thick was your wetsuit, what was the current, what was the air temperature.
How much weight did you need to balance yourself?
Because you're not going to be able to remember that stuff 4 years later when you're diving in similar. Because I wonder if I was wearing the 351 or the 357. Like, I can't remember. Yep. And then you get in the water and go, my buoyancy is way off. And if you don't do that, because what's going to happen in the team, they're going to spring a real world mission. Oh, you haven't dove in 4 months? Now you have a real world mission off the coast of Somalia in a fucking 3-knot current. Like, oh shit, I don't want to wear a 7 mil wetsuit. Which all I've ever dove in Washington State was a 7 mil wetsuit.
Yeah.
I don't want to dive in a 7 mil wetsuit when the water is 91 degrees.
No, you don't.
In a 3-knot current, you'll die, right? So it's like we're being extreme, but these are the sort of things, like on an extreme case, which is even more magnificent. If you get a chance to watch the movie Free Solo, it's on iTunes. It's the man who was the first and only person to ever free solo ALCAP.
Oh, wow.
And what he did. He's Asperger's, like he's legitimately Asperger's, and so is his father. But he literally, so you can imagine, it's a 3,300-foot sheer rock face. He literally hand-wrote every single day he climbed, exactly step-by-step, hand-by-hand. It's like left hand reaches, to, and he's labeling these on the stone. And then it says like thumb over thumb, lock in, extend with left foot, karate kick, post. Squeeze left lat, shift, palm left hand. He wrote every single day, every single grip hold, all 3,000 feet in a notebook every day.
That's incredible.
So granted, he's in the sections that he'd worked 4 or 5 hour sections. He'd do it, come back down, write his notes. Do it again, come back down, write his notes. Over and over. He did it for over a year.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, yes, got it. He's Asperger's, but you understand that's you're going to find team guys in the community that are doing about, oh, this is what I wore on the range today. This is how I shot. Yep. This is my skydive. Like, a lot of my skydiving logs are very, very specific, right?
Yep.
That's why write your stuff down.
So the day before should be nothing new to you, right? That is, in a nutshell, should be everything that you've always done to perform well, and you should know how your performance is going to be because you slept this long, you ate these foods, and you've hydrated this much and all this stuff. Now, how about game day? Anything specific on game other than, you know, do specifics? I personally, for me, I like to eat something kind of light, especially if it's in the morning, maybe a banana, you know, something like that agrees with me, maybe a little bit of, you know, some kind of protein in there, maybe a piece of peanuts, you know, peanut butter or something like that, something very gentle. And then I'll carry with me some form of carbohydrate drink because I know if I'm putting out, I'm going to go anaerobic and I'm going to be burning a lot of blood sugar and glycogen. So I like to be able to quickly post some of that stuff in there, whether it's through a piece of gum, you know, during push-ups and sit-ups, or it's through sipping some Gatorade or juice or something that has some sugar in it, real sugar, not fake sugar, but real sugar that can just give me that little extra kick on that fifth and sixth lap of the mile and a half, because I've done too many PSTs in my life, you know, either post buds, pre buds, currently in the last 10 years. And I know when I fall off, right? I can hit that mile mark of the mile and a half and just really downshift because I can't keep it up anymore, you know. But, you know, through some sipping of, you know, some sugar water throughout the PST. And like I said, if I took a whole Gatorade can with me or a bottle, you know, I might only be halfway into it by the time I'm running. And then I drink the other half after I'm running. But you don't want to drink a whole bottle during a PST. It's just going to slosh in your stomach and make you sick. Yep. So
I have a plan for, this is my plan 3 days out. This is just kind of what I share with people. And this is what I did. This is what I still do. When I'm going to go do something physically that I know I need to prepare for in the morning or time. Cause here's the thing. Most all of you will know when your PST timing is with your mentor. You'll know it's like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, maybe noon, whatever. Yep. You're going to know that. I really hope you're going to know that. That's something that shouldn't be kept secret.
Right.
If it's being kept secret, I would really question, but again, that's a whole topic.
Yeah.
So 3 days out, I'm going to choose exactly what I'm going to eat pre-PST. Why? 3 days out, I'm going to start implementing it. I'm going to get up the same time I'm going to get up for my PST. My PST is 8 o'clock and I got to drive. My ass is getting up 3 days before at the time I need to get up. I'm going to start sipping on what, like Stu is saying. I'm going to go outside. I'm going to get myself in my PST positions, knock out a couple push-ups in the position, right? Move on. Do some pull-ups. I'm going to simulate these micro PSTs to see how my stomach reacts to how I'm going to fuel it. Moreover, by the time I get to day three, I've already done it 2 days in a row successfully. I've been able to avoid GI distress. I've been able to understand what I do. Because here's the thing. People that are walking up to the line, rubbing their eyes, yawning for their PST, you're fucking wrong.
Yeah.
You should have already fixed that days before, right? If you're in a state of yawning, right, and rubbing your eyes, and I'm tired, and I didn't have time to eat, and you're spilling out of your car and trying to get your socks and shoes on, go away. Go try it some other time, because I don't want you in my team. Yeah. You know, it's like, if you really, really want to be successful something, set yourself up for it so there's no guesswork, right? Yeah. Guys, the NFL Combine, you know, just kicked off and finished a while back. Those people that have to run the 40, the T-drill, the shuttle, the vertical, the bench press, they've been practicing it for a minimum of 6 weeks prior, just getting into the position, right? And then working your team. That's what the PST is, right? Practice the stuff other than the reps. You're getting the reps through the work. Like you're saying, like, we want to train for war, not the battle. Like the war is military service, is law enforcement. It ain't the PST. If all you ever do is train for the battle, you get overtrained, you're beat up.
Yep.
Right. And that's like, that's the weird thing. Like you get two MMA thoughts. You get the MMA camp that just spar, and it works for them. And then you get like the GSP camp that works smart, and has longevity. None of those spar camps have any longevity.
Right.
But they also are like, well, you're not a fighter. Yeah. And the GSP's laughing his way to the top.
Yeah.
And everybody else who's taking their time. You know, and so that's where we're starting to see kind of this microcosm of mistakes from a historical combatives world, because now you have these camps that are having fighters go in very healthy all the time.
Right.
That's where we're looking for the PST.
That's really cool. You know what? I saw Tim Kennedy announce that he's going back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is he Bellator or UFC though?
I don't know, but he's going to go back to fighting again, which, you know, the reason why he feels good right now and wants to go back in. Because he's had a year off.
He's taking time off. Yeah. And so this Bellator is really doing much better, and they're getting some great fighters. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's good friends with Tim, who's also a pro fighter. He was like, he had told me a couple weeks back that Tim was getting back in. I think he was going Bellator, though.
Oh, okay.
Which is fine. I that's not a step down as far as I understand anymore, because people are sick of the UFC sort of high, like, you know, aristocracy, like, you're going to wear this and you can't do this. And I think Bellator is kind
of like the NFL over there.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, it'll be good. But so again, folks, my summary is this is the 10 days before your PST is not the time to cram. You should have spent the last year studying, we'll say.
Yeah. You know, my, My closing to this is the reason why, unfortunately, we give this presentation and other podcasts in the past and articles I've written, and quite frankly, the programs, is because here's what we see a lot of. You know, I don't want to see anybody set themselves up for failure, but you're going to set yourself up for failure if you turn 18 and go talk to a recruiter and then find out you have to take a 500-yard swim and you got to learn how to swim, but you're already in the delayed entry program, right? And you took your first PST and didn't finish. You know, how seriously are they going to take you as a candidate for spec war, right? If you can't even, you know, pass this fitness test. So you're going to pass or you're going to fail. There's going to be a failure group. There's going to be a passing group. And, you know, you want to be in that passing group. Not only do you want to be in the passing group, but you want to be in the top 10% of that passing group. So, you know, we had a couple of our guys go take the PST this past week. And, you know, the guy is really smart, you know, has finished college, crushed the PST day one. And, you know, they said, hey, do you want to leave this Tuesday? He goes, no, I want to leave end of the summer, right? I got another 6 months to get through buds, you know, to prepare to get through buds. You know, I focused, you know, the last couple of months on this test today, which I just crushed, and now I want to focus on, you know, getting
got the battle. Now let's go train for the war.
Now let's go focus on getting through buds, right?
Yep.
Unfortunately, if you're stuck in this constant PST loop, taking it over and over and over again, and let's say you finally pass it, you get to go to boot camp, you know, a week afterwards, and now you've gotten good at taking the PST, right? You've deloaded from, you know, boot camp.
From any volume that you could acquire.
From any volume whatsoever for 2 months. Then you go take a PST and you fail it. And you don't even get your chance to go. Or let's say you pass and you go through buds prep and you've spent 6 weeks kind of preparing to get through buds. It may not be enough. You know, if it's enough, God bless you, because you probably got some hardcore mentality and you mentally toughed it out to be able to get through buds on that level of preparation, which there's plenty that do that. And, you know, I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying that, you know, you need a little bit of both. You need to have that grit, and you also need to have the foundation so that you don't fail the standard and you don't hurt yourself trying to get to the standard.
Yeah.
So that's why we do this, because unfortunately buds is filled with 80% of those people who went there unprepared.
Yeah.
And
I guess it's unfortunate that we can't get everyone to hear or heed that advice. I got an email this weekend, a message like, hey, I just entered the DEP, and I passed my PST, I've entered DEP, and I have 3 weeks before I ship out. What tips do you have for buds?
And I was like, I hate tips. I hate tips.
I don't offer tips, number one. Two, I just said, you know, from a percentage standpoint, likelihood of that person making it through just off of what he is at. Because then he sent me his numbers, and I was like, you auto-qualled with 12 pull-ups.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Like, how is that? You know, you 9:20 run, auto-qual. Kid doesn't have a chance, probably, physically. Like, not a chance.
Yeah, I mean,
because all he's done is play. He's worked on his PST little.
I mean,
physically fortunate enough to pass the PST. He goes off to boot camp for 9-10 weeks, and now he's got to learn how to prepare, like get volume, right?
Oh, yeah, and plus that, you know, the 500-yard swim turns into 2-mile swims with fins.
Uh-huh.
And that mile and a half turns into a 4-mile run every week, plus, you know, platoon runs or class runs on soft sand. And, you know, there's a lot more to prepare for than the test. And it's, you know, in a perfect world, this test would prepare you for these things, but
it does not.
Reality means you got it. Phase two of tactical fitness is preparing to get through the training. And that is a significant amount of time. And I will tell you this, eventually, if you crush that PST hardcore, right, and now you're focusing on maintaining the PST score, but also getting through buds, then you're next PST is no big deal. It's just another workout. You know, you don't need to take a 10-week taper for it. You've already crushed it. Now you just got to go there and just do a little bit better, right? And it's there. Maybe take a little bit of an easy day the day before, but that's it. Don't let a PST ruin your prep.
Yeah, that's there's so much focus on the PST that it inhibits the PST. By nature of what's being done physically, what's being asked, maximal this, do as many as you can within an allotted period of time, that mathematics does not allow for much error at all, especially if it's you're doing it on a weekly basis. There is what then that you've gone beyond the margin of no error. If you're doing a PST every week or more than once a month, you are 100% without a doubt in diminishing returns. That's it. That's the reality. Like if you are being asked or being told or being forced to do the PST with any sort of regularity, then they certainly are not doing what's best for you, period. Now, you may have put yourself in that position.
Right, because you constantly failed it. Now you got to show up and take it every week until you pass it.
So let's be that's on you. Clear. Like, that's not – I'm not spitting venom at the mentors.
No, no.
You, as an 18-year-old adult, have got to know that. Like, they're there to facilitate a test.
Yes.
That is it. Naval Swisher Warfare is not using these mentors to formally train you all. Now, there is, like – I'm not saying that they're not. I'm just saying you understand, like, these men are trying to get you to buds.
Yes.
That's their job. That's it. Mentor you, get you to boot camp, right? To get to the Buds program. Their job is not to babysit you and handhold you.
Yeah. I will say this, Jeff. It is 10 times better than it used to be.
True.
Because there used to be no mentor there that even gave you a PST. You know, your first PST was taken at Buds.
Right.
Or no, sorry, at boot camp. You know, when you got there.
Same idea. I took mine on day 3 of boot camp.
Right.
There was no second chance. There was 4,000 of us that had opportunity to take it. 4 took it. 3 passed. Right. So, and the thing is like.
So it's a better system than it was.
Right. From a standpoint of giving you guys opportunity, it's a far better system. What you guys are not doing is making the system better, thinking, oh, these guys can handle the 6,000 guys a year that want to be SEALs. That's what they can't handle.
Right.
Right. And that's not their fault. That's because 65% of you or whatever the number is are showing up ill-prepared and expecting these 3 men at Great Lakes to get you all in shape. It's not going to happen. You have got to take the initiative prior to the mentor.
Absolutely.
Not after you've met the mentor, not prior. So we've said this, and this is the last I'll say. Give the mentor an opportunity to help you by exceeding the PST standards prior to introducing yourself via handshake.
Absolutely. That's the number one piece of advice right there.
Yep.
You know, you got to be prepared when you go into these things. And, and I've seen it long before. You know, I've seen this in the 90s. You know, I remember guys would think boot camp's going to get them in shape for Buds.
It's not the job. Right? The Navy's job.
It's not the Navy's job at all. I mean,
sure. The United States Navy's job is not to prepare you for Buds.
Right. I mean, think about it. I mean, if you're really just a basic sedentary person, boot camp will get you in shape. Right. But if you're hardcore getting ready for Buds, boot camp should be a 8-week deloading phase where you're going to get a little bit out of shape. Yep. You know, you may lose a little bit of weight, and if you're lucky, you may even come out running faster because you're a little lighter.
Yeah.
You know, but still.
Right. So that's why we're also saying, like, the last piece is, I guess, we're saying treat yourself, like, get yourself healthy before your PST. That's what Stu and I are going to talk about kind of next time. It's like, hey, what does your healing process post boot camp, graduating, getting in? So how do we help the Buds mentors at Great Lakes as students? Okay, you've passed your PST. You've gotten through boot camp with just minimal sniffles and a little bit of fever and Santa Box. You kind of got through. So this is what we're going to talk about probably next time. Is like, okay, Now you're through boot camp. The guy that we're talking about, he made it through boot camp. He had a little bit of sinus infection, dropped some weight, didn't get the stimulus. What does this person do with sleep and eating and training to help the guys that are good teachers at Great Lakes, to help you? Like Jerry Maguire, help me help you, all right?
Yes.
So that's kind of where we're going with this too. Is like we're not trying to create friction for these mentors in MSW. We're trying to get you guys to understand, make their job easier.
Yeah, that's it. All on the same team here.
Yep, 100%.
So, all right. So, Jeff, until next time, we'll hit something. Maybe take this student to the next level.
Yep.
Maybe even break it down on like all the different things you can do, you know, on the weekends at Buds to help yourself heal.
100%. Yeah.
So that's what we'll do on the next few podcasts. So you guys listen up and watch our channels, and you'll be able to see what's up.
We'll be back.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, dude.